Simon the Pharisee was probably the sort of guy that liked to collect important and famous friends. He would probably come up with ways to drop their names into conversations, telling stories of the things he did with them. My guess is he probably had a hallway where there was a bunch of pictures of him, like George Bush and Nickelback, whatever. He'd play rounds of golf with the local politicians. And so when this young rabbi started making waves, started making a name for himself, he thought, I've got to check out what all this buzz is about. At the very least, having Jesus of Nazareth as a guest would make for a good story. And as it turns out, he wasn't wrong. That being said, Simon didn't really want to let on like he might be a follower of this Jesus character. And so, even though he'd staged a festive meal and invited a whole assortment of all kinds of friends, he made little efforts to put Jesus in his place. Yes, a guest, but a guest of honor? Maybe not. An oddity? An entertaining character, maybe. Maybe even the butt of a few jokes, though, at the end of the day. In spite of all of this, Jesus took his place at this man's table. At some point during the meal, someone who Luke euphemistically calls a woman in the city who was a sinner lets herself in to the dinner party. And let's be clear, the text does not explicitly tell us who this woman was or what sort of sinner she was, but it doesn't take very much imagination to deduce that we're probably not talking about embezzlement or white-collar crime. It's safe to say this woman is a sex worker. She's a prostitute. She has a shameful past, and it's embarrassing for everyone that she's there. This is a room full of successful and educated and religious upstanding men in the community. She surely doesn't belong here, at least not in the daylight. Is this person really here? This is such an embarrassment. Now, to be clear, all sorts of people might gather in your house if you decided to host a rabbi there. It wasn't so crazy that people from the neighborhood would come for a visit, but really? This woman thinks she's welcome here in decent company? But she's really only just getting started, isn't she? What follows is a vivid and awkward and beautiful moment for everyone in the room. For a start, she lets her hair down. This is a much more revealing act than anyone is prepared for. Simply put, it is not done by any respectable woman in public, and maybe not even at home most of the time. In the ancient Near Eastern world, a woman's hair was a private part, an intimate part. It was the gift she might reserve for her husband on their wedding night. Not something that you unravel and put on display for a room full of strange men. Now, it might be a room full of strangers, but she only sees one man, Jesus, the friend of sinners. And she makes a beeline straight to him, and she starts by bathing his dusty feet in her tears, wiping them with the long flowing tresses of her hair, kissing his feet even. And finally, she pours open her precious jar of essential oils on his feet, kissing them, anointing them with more oil. This is deep love, manifest in tears and kisses and perfume. As the dining room fills with the rich scent, one thing is clear. This is an awkward moment for all of the dinner guests. This is the part in the movie where the man in the top hat has his monocle pop right out. Whoa! I declare, gentlemen, who invited this horrible woman? This is unseemly. Got a little more foppish than I meant to there, sorry. Oh. When Simon saw this, he said to himself, "If this man were a prophet, he would know what kind of woman is touching him." But as it turns out, Jesus knows exactly what sort of woman is touching him. And he also knows well enough what his host is thinking. He doesn't apologize to the room for the embarrassment. He doesn't scold the woman for her revealing and sensual display. Instead, Jesus' defense of this woman is an absolute masterpiece. "Simon, I've got something to say to you." And then he tells a story, a delightfully short little parable about two debtors. One owes 500 silver pieces and the other owes 50. When they could not pay the debt collector, canceled the debts for both of them. Now tell me, Simon, which of those people would love the forgiving debt collector more? I guess Simon got more than he bargained for when he invited a young rabbi to his table. And what a beautiful trap Jesus has set. Because there really is only one answer, right? I guess it was the one who he canceled the greater debt. Simon says meekly, "Right answer, Simon. Do you see this woman? You invited me to your house, and we both know the customary responsibilities of a good host. Even though you call me rabbi, you gave me no water to wash my feet. You didn't greet me with a kiss. You didn't bless my head with oil as I came into your home." Jesus is critiquing his hospitality. It's a brutal critique of Simon's lack of hospitality. "Don't you see, Simon, this woman, this so-called sinful woman, is doing your job for you. But she doesn't have a basin of water, so she washes my feet with her tears. She doesn't have a towel, but she's using her hair. And she doesn't have oil, but she's got perfumed essential oils around her neck. She's not kissing me on the cheek, she's kissing my feet, Simon." It does seem strange that Simon would end up in a situation like this. Hadn't he heard Jesus' teaching up to this point? His message of forgiveness and mercy for sinners? His compassion for all sorts of left out losers and loners? Old habits die hard, I guess. Simon, the upstanding citizen and religious man, had missed the point entirely, but the sex worker, the disgraced woman, demonstrated incredible insight, prophetic vision even, and a deep awareness of the shape of Jesus' ministry in the world. And she did all of it without saying a word. "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." This amazing story from Luke's gospel is strange and beautiful and timeless. It's filled with tension. It's filled with heart. It's a deeply moving portrait of worship and gratitude. It gives hope to any of us who feel like we will never make the cut. Because the love of Christ and God's movement towards us is simply breathtaking. But there's an edge to this story, too. Sin comes in so many shapes and sizes, doesn't it? Secret, petty hatreds, systematic injustice, exploitation, greed in all its forms, so many shapes of idolatry and lust, so many subtle varieties. And this sin stuff, it gets into everything. It's like sand at the beach. Every corner of our lives bears the smudge and the smell of it. If there's one reoccurring theme that comes back for me time and time again in the Gospels, it's this one. You can check off all of the right religious boxes. You can give the money. You can earn the degrees. You can associate with the right people. You can keep all the rules. And despite all of this, you may well find that your entire religious effort was little more than a sort of costume. It's like a comically oversized mascot's outfit made out of foam and felt, and it smells like sour sweat and disappointment. And it stays on the sidelines. Here's the thing, though. In Jesus' little parable, both of those debt holders were forgiven. Both of them. Jesus looked at the woman, and he looked at Simon, and he saw both of them, and he said, "This is good news. There is hope for people who seem to think they made the cut already, too. Go in peace. Your faith has saved you." This miracle called the church is a place where people like you and me join the company of other restored sinners. Other people made new, stripping off their crazy religious costumes, living as vulnerable people, lifted out of humiliation, out of sorrow, and because of all this, we can live with a generous posture. We can overflow with a great embarrassment of hospitality and welcome, because the church is a gathering of living humans made new by Christ. Now, when I say all this, those of us who've been injured by religious systems or people, this is a terrifying prospect. It's a great risk to live in the church, this place of this sort of vulnerability, a place for tears and kisses and perfume. And people rightly ask, "Am I safe here? Am I welcome here?" We may have a lot of lessons yet to learn, but my prayer is that we might live as such a people. This last week, I was with some of our youth at the Mustard Seed, and we were helping serve supper to about 300 hungry people. Now, a lot of you have served a meal at the Seed, and you know what that lineup looks like, right? Some of those people have traveled many hard miles on this earth. And they show it in their hungry eyes, and they wear it in their scars and open wounds that are wrapped up in gauze and medical tape. Well, partway through the meal this Thursday, one of the youth whispered to me and said, "Why would anyone wear that jacket?" And so I looked down the line, and I saw a man in a black jacket, and it was covered in patches. And some of those patches looked like motorcycle paraphernalia. But mixed in with the biker logos, there were some Nazi emblems, SS lightning bolts, skulls, and even right in the middle, a swastika. And for a moment, there was a part of me that felt that surge of irritation just well up inside me. A swastika? Really? In this political climate? But then, when the man made his way down the line towards me, and it was my turn to reach out and hold his paper plate, give him a portion of salad greens and a tomato wedge, I looked up and I saw him. And I didn't see a black jacket. There I saw a man who wore his sorrow and his struggle on his face, the same way he wore his rage and his anger on his jacket. If regular people like you and me can find the grace and the compassion to look past our own lives, past the great differences that separate us, if we have the capacity to look beyond our own little worlds and see the other human beings in the room, how much more does the living Christ see us? Covered or uncovered? Anonymous or in plain sight? The living Christ sees you. Sees you for what you are. Knows who you are intimately. Knows that you are one set free and forgiven a great debt. Thanks be to God.